Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. Today, we take a special look and listen to the recent National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws conference. My name is Dean Becker, reporting first from Oakland, where the local cannabis clubs keep the streets clean and provide open-air jazz concerts like the one you hear in the background. Bucking the national trend, cannabis prices are lower in Oakland and San Francisco than in most of the rest of our nation. The conference, featuring hundreds of members of Normal from around the country, was held in the city of San Francisco, a short BART train ride away from Oakland. And this is the newly installed director of Normal, Mr. Alan St. Pierre.
It is like bringing the tribe home every year. Everybody gets invigorated. They get all kinds of information that they can take home with them. You really just come out of it with a sense of strong community. You're not alone. You're not going back to your local state or jurisdiction thinking, I'm the only one that is working towards legalizing marijuana and getting involved in stopping the drug war. And so when you hear doctors, and you hear physicians, when you hear academicians, when you hear patients, when you hear experts in particular fields, like as we're speaking right now, there is a premier panel going on discussing the forensic of drug testing, and most notably regarding drugged driving. For those not in the know, in the next 2 or 3 years, many state and federal governments are going to try to start randomly drug testing people on the side of the road and trying to take their licenses away. So we're out ahead of that information and trying to teach people about the forensic science that does not support such a public policy. So those things begin at Normal conferences.
And just who benefits most from these conferences? The medical marijuana patients. Here is one such patient, Mr. William Britt.
And I use marijuana for epilepsy and post-polio syndrome. I've been using cannabis for, additionally, probably for over 20 years. Before Prop 215, I was considered a criminal. And after the law passed, lo and behold, I'm not a criminal anymore. I started by helping a friend who was dying of cancer and working with Marvin Chavez in Orange County, helping other people. My friend with cancer, I saw what it was like to the benefits. This is when I really saw the immediate benefits, when I saw how the pain that he was in and the suffering, and I saw how cannabis eased the suffering.
Next, we hear from Steve Dillon, the chairman of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws.
Well, in summary, I'm asking people to get up and to stand up for their rights, that it's outrageous what's been happening in this country, that the government has proposed a number of lies, and they've passed laws that are clearly overreaching, and they're certainly overreaching and violating our constitutional rights in the medical marijuana cases like Munson and Rausch. We believe that it's time for people to realize they're in the majority, that 72% of the citizens in this country believe you shouldn't send pot smokers to jail. And even a higher percentage, 75% of the people in this country, believe you shouldn't send medical marijuana patients with a valid prescription to jail. So it's time for people to realize they're truly in the majority and to stand up for what they truly believe in and vote for candidates they truly believe in and will promote change, to register to vote, to be on juries, to write letters to the editor, and to join Normal and other organizations that seek to reform marijuana laws. It's time to stand up for your rights. That's kind of the theme of this conference.
Next, we hear from our good friend Kevin Zeese, who was Ralph Nader's press secretary in the last election cycle and who is president of Common Sense for Drug Policy.
What came out of that for me for drug policy was a few things. One, we need to get more political as a movement that challenging politicians to accept our issue during election year is critically important. We can't let elections go by without asking elected officials at all levels, politicians at all levels, local, state, and national, what's your view on various aspects of the drug war? and challenging them. You know, in the urban level, there's certainly questions about the spread of HIV, you know, by injection drug users. There's questions about priorities, the cost of the drug war at the city and county level as well as the state level, how much money we're spending when at the same time we're not providing health care to people, not providing adequate daycare, or college tuition is going up consistently throughout the country. Does it make sense for us to be putting money into a policy we know is a failed policy, the drug war, when we aren't able to let kids get into afford college anymore? Or for daycare and other areas. So I think we need to recognize that the drug war is competing with other policies, and a budget only has a certain amount of money. If we're going to put money into the drug war, it means that you're not going to get schools, you're not going to get housing, you're not going to get health care, you're not going to get the necessities being met, because the necessities of the American people are not being met on almost every level. So I think it's important for us to do two things. One, challenge elected officials at public meetings consistently about the waste of money on a failed policy. And I think whatever you just call it the drug war, call it the failed drug war, just to emphasize it's a failure. And the second thing is to recognize how our issue links up to almost every other issue facing the public.
In years past, there has been a definite line drawn between the marijuana, medical marijuana folks, and those who are for ending the drug war outright. This year, that line is disappearing. This is the Director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, Mr. Jack Cole.
Things that we've been saying for years, people are starting to come around to agree with, even in the other drug policy reform groups.
And you speak of the need for us to try to find ways to attach ourselves to these other organizations and their attempts to, you know, perhaps speak for medical marijuana or for needle exchange or whatever. But it all falls under the umbrella of changing the overall policy, which is the goal of law enforcement. Let's talk about how you've become a member of NORML and encouraged others to be part of other organizations, to adapt what they're up to.
Well, yeah, after I finished talking today, actually yesterday, in my talk, I told them that I thought as soon as I finished speaking to them, I was going to go out and join NORML, because it is a very important organization. All of those drug policy groups out there are important, and we should be joining the different organizations and trying to work collectively instead of each one working on its own little subject. And of course, what we at LEAP believe is that if we end drug prohibition, that will take care of all these other things that all the other drug policy groups are working toward. So anything that we're doing is also something that we want to see these other people succeed in. So why shouldn't we collectively all get together and get more power by the fact that we're one group? And I don't mean one group under one name. I mean one group supporting each other, even though we're many different organizations. We've got to work together.
So, in lieu of Jack Cole's deciding to become a member of NORML, yours truly, a member of NORML, the Drug Policy Forum of Texas and Americans for Safe Access, decided to become a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. I would venture to say that the vast majority of my listeners don't know that I was a cop. I was a security policeman for the United States Air Force in the late 1960s, guarding hydrogen bombs from young Osama. Jack Cole decided to make me a speaker for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and now you might see me wearing a shirt that has on the back, "Cops say legalize marijuana. Ask me why." This cross-pollination between reform organizations has come about through the sharing of information. And where do we get that information? From MapInc.org. And here's the director of DrugSense, Mr. Mark Greer.
Well, as many people are aware, we've continued archiving news articles. We now have the deepest collection of news articles. Frankly, it goes up so fast I can't keep track, but I think we're over a quarter million articles archived on drug policy issues, all fully searchable on just about any subject. We've got thousands upon thousands of letters to the editor accomplished and archived on the MapInc site as well. We also continue to do radio talk shows and interviews and try to approach the broadcast media. And to that end, we've recently launched a new project called the Media Activism Facilitator Project. What that's designed to do is to utilize a program called PAL Talk, which enables online conference calling, videos, and text. And what we try to do is approach local organizations and make them more familiar with and comfortable with using some of our resources. For example, the media database, which contains more than 30,000 media contacts, newspapers, magazines, and broadcast media, radio talk shows, television stations, local stations, and so forth. And we try to train folks on both how to access that information and then use it to contact the media to do more radio talk shows, local TV interviews on drug policy issues, as well as, of course, the our old standby, the letters to the editor, op-eds, and so forth.
I think one thing we should always keep in mind, that the drug war is nothing more than a sham, a fraud, a means to inflict ongoing pain to many, many patients across this nation. Rather than allow people access to medical marijuana or even to hard drugs that would help alleviate excruciating pain, the government chooses to say, suck it up, dude. Let's hear from another medical marijuana patient.
My name is Suzanne File, and I'm a patient with WAM, Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana. I had polio as an infant, and now I have a condition called post-polio syndrome.
Tell us a bit about WAM.
WAM was started in 1993 by Valerie Corral and her husband Mike, and was formed to treat the most seriously ill people in our community, many of which are pretty disenfranchised economically.
It's my understanding that over the lifetime of the WAM organization, there have been more deaths than there have been months that the organization has existed.
So far, we've counted 155 deaths among our members since WAM's inception in 1993.
And these are people with very specific, very definite medical problems which benefit from the use of medical cannabis. Talk about the diversity of those who make use of medicinal cannabis.
WAM's a very diverse organization. The majority of our patients have AIDS, followed by cancer, neuromuscular disorders such as multiple sclerosis, post-polio, quadriplegia, paraplegia, glaucoma. You have to be pretty seriously ill to get into WAM. One of our board members who's now passed away said, you know, literally that people are dying to get into WAM. Because we're a small community collective, unfortunately, we're not able to serve everyone in our community, all the patients in our community. In the earlier days, you could get in with a less life-threatening illness, but especially since the DEA raid, the only way to get into WAM right now is through attrition. When someone dies, we can take someone else on.
And speaking of the DEA bust, it was some now approximate 2.5-3 years ago that they raided the farm. They took the nearer ready-for-harvest plants and hauled them off in trucks. But this past season, y'all had a good grow, if you will, were able to harvest and store your medicine. Let's talk about that success.
You know, the DEA raid was definitely a low point. No patient should be woken up at gunpoint and dragged out of their bed and have their medicine confiscated, as what happened to me on that morning. You know, I think the DEA thought that they were going to close us down and shut us down, and would make us an example to the rest of the clubs that you can operate totally within the law, you can be non-profit, you can serve the most seriously ill people, and we're still going to take you down, we're still going to mess with you, nobody's safe. But in the face of that, you know, we filed for an injunction against the DEA, and we won our injunction. And under this injunction, we've been able to grow. Last year was the biggest, most beautiful, most bountiful harvest that we've ever had. Unfortunately, we don't know how the ruling is going to go with the Supreme Court. And if the ruling goes against us, we might have our injunction lifted, and that would put us back at risk of, again, being raided by the federal government and the DEA.
Well, it is, again, about planting time. Let's hope that this year comes out in the favor of all of us having rights to choose our own medicines.
Hallelujah. We certainly, you know, we're hoping for the best, and you know, for many of us, it's not a choice. We have to continue to do this work. We can't, I won't live in a persistent pain state, and I would hope that people would have as much compassion for me as they did for Terry Schiavo, who lives, you know, was not conscious and aware or able to feel pain. And I would hope they would have as much compassion for people that are conscious and aware and able to feel pain and are suffering.
Okay, we're going to take our mid-show break. Get on your thinking caps and get ready to name that drug. Here's a hint. It's a rerun. It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Severe headache, dizziness, blurred vision, restlessness, insomnia, an allergic reaction, difficulty breathing, closing of the throat, an irregular heartbeat, very high blood pressure, abnormal behavior, confusion, and hallucinations. Time's up. The answer, methamphetamine speed. Another FDA-approved product.
You want your little kid? Say, hey, Daddy, President Bush tried marijuana. I think I will.
Drug Czar of the Americas, John Walters.
High-potency marijuana ought not to be considered as a marijuana was in the past. It ought to be considered another new drug.
Business is good.
Everybody's buying.
Thank God the Drug Czar fights so hard to keep marijuana illegal. He's the best friend we've got.
Thank you, Mr. Drug Czar.
Word. They regulated marijuana, took it off the streets, and taxed it like beer, we'd be out of business.
Dude, that would suck.
Yeah. It would. Oh, my God.
Marijuana prohibition. Harmless? Contact the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, NORML.org. Okay, you are listening to Cultural Baggage on the Drug Truth Network. My name is Dean Becker, and this is a series of reports filed from the recent Normal Conference in San Francisco.
This is Dr. Dave Bierman. I'm a general practitioner in Goleta, California. I do pain management, and in that capacity mainly do evaluations to see whether or not people qualify for Prop 215. I've been practicing medicine in California since 1968. I've had kind of an interesting career. I gave money away for the U.S. government to low-income communities. That was kind of fun. I started a community clinic. I ran the drug treatment program at the Haight-Ashbury Clinic. Matter of fact, I've had about 35 years experience in one way or another involved in drug abuse treatment and prevention. In addition, I started a community clinic in Isla Vista. I have taught at a number of colleges, UCSB, San Diego State, about drug pharmacology and physiology. I've run a health department. I was the director of the health department and the health officer for Sutter County. And for 17 years, I worked for a Medi-Cal managed care program as a medical director and the deputy director for grants development in Santa Barbara. So I've had kind of a varied career, and I've had a lot of involvement and interest in the whole area of substance abuse treatment and prevention and education in regards to substances. And for about the last 4 or 5 years, I've seen many, many patients who are interested in being evaluated to see whether or not they would qualify for a recommendation or approval of the medicinal use of cannabis.
The medicinal use of cannabis. Let's talk to a San Francisco grower and provider and cannabis cafe owner about the various products and the various uses of medical marijuana.
But once you get the bud, there's the sweet trim. And the indoor growers out here have basically pulled off most of their shade fan leaves off, so when they harvest, there isn't any buds with a leaf more than like 3 inches left on them. So when we trim this all up, it's very, very heavily crystal-rich, resin-laced. So if you take the dried leaf and rub it onto something first, like a really coarse screen, you can separate all the heads and those resin-laden stalks that are just cells. From that point, you get the real good gold keef going. And then you rub it again the next time, it's a higher ratio of stalks because you've already passed through most of the heads. And about the third time you rub it on your key screen, you're going to get a product now that's going to require heat and a touch of moisture to bond it into that brick of old-fashioned Moroccan or the Lebanese gold hash that you're familiar with. when they have keefed out to the point where they don't think it's a now a sellable product, you can take that material, put it in a blender, grind it down real fine like flour, put it back on the keef screen. You're going to get a huge pile of green dust on the bottom. You'll find that that keef is going to be about 3/4, maybe 60% crystals. You can either use the keef in that form in a couple of teaspoons in a brownie, or you can take that keef, we call it cooking keef then, we'll put that through a butane process that will give us a large chunk of high-grade black oil. So if you were to take a trash bag full of trim, reduce that to a gallon of cooking keef, reduce that to a pint of cooking oil, then that oil is like the same for every gram. So if I make a gram, that should be about 20 cookies in that gram of oil. I can now make one batch of brownies, cookies, pecan pies, Rice Krispie treats. The list just goes on and on to anything you can think to bake. The people would stop after they have made their cold water hash and take their pulp, wet and gooey, not knowing what to do with it. We found that you put that wet pulp into like a lobster pot, a 4-gallon huge pot. Flood the material out till there's just like an inch of milk on top of it. Steep that at 170 degrees. Don't bring it to a boil or the milk will curdle. And then get a pillowcase, or in my case, a professional food press for making wine. I put it in a clean 5-gallon bucket and a sack of cheesecloth and squeeze it down to just this little plug. Now I have 3.5 gallons of hot milk, very green, in my, which I can flavor to be bang. Flood off another gallon of fresh milk in there until you have a 5-gallon container full. That chocolate milk is too strong to be consumed straight. It's a concentrate still. A lot of people make 4 cups of hot chocolate. And a lot of MS patients find that it controls their muscle spasms really good with just 1 ounce shot in their coffee cups every morning. So an 8-ounce jar is an entire week's supply. So you can take 80 MS patients for a week on what you're throwing away on a 1-ounce ball of cold water hash.
Much as the Plains Indians used every sinew, bone, and fiber of the buffalo, so too are the medical marijuana providers using every beneficial cell of this plant. Another organization that's very much involved in fighting for the rights of medical marijuana patients is the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org.
Rob Campia with the Marijuana Policy Project in Washington, D.C.
Rob, we're here today at the Normal Conference. We get a chance to talk with many other reformers across the nation. And what do you see happening for MPP? Where are we headed? What might we accomplish?
Well, our biggest project is that we have an initiative that's qualified for the ballot in Nevada. It'll be on the November 2006 ballot, and it would end marijuana prohibition entirely, not just for medical use, and it would regulate marijuana similarly to alcohol, with the tax revenues going towards drug and alcohol treatment. And in doing so, if we can pass this initiative in 2006, it would allow the police to spend their time on real crimes like burglary and assault and rape rather than sniffing under people's doors trying to find a nonviolent marijuana smoker to arrest. The big project in Congress is going to be that the U.S. House of Representatives is going to vote on a medical marijuana amendment this summer, which will be the third summer in a row that they will have done so. And the amendment seeks to prohibit the DEA from raiding medical marijuana patients and providers in states where medical marijuana is legal. And so even though the perception is that the federal government is way completely out of whack with what the American people want, generally that's true, but Congress is moving in the right direction, and we're not all that far from winning a congressional vote on medical marijuana.
And just who really stands in the way of reform at this point in time? Is it a few dozen or perhaps a few hundred true drug warriors like John Walters, the illustrious drug czar of the Americas, or the few, the proud, the prohibitionists like Calvina Faye and her podunk website, Drug Free America, who, despite their failing efforts, managed to receive grants worth millions of dollars to spout their propaganda. In time, truth will be the servant of the medical cannabis community. Normal presented several awards this year for outstanding work in the field of drug reform. Gary Stork and Jackie Rickert were two such recipients.
We received the Peter McWilliams Lifetime Achievement Award for Medical Marijuana Activism.
Yes.
Joint award for me and Jackie. Well, we've been working pretty hard at the local, state, and national levels. We've been to Washington. We've worked in Madison. We've formed Emily Is My Medicine Legal Yet back in 2000, and Emily has been the leading medical marijuana advocacy organization in Wisconsin, but we've also extended that nationally when we visited Washington, and we've spoken at the Capitol, and both the U.S. Capitol and the state Capitol.
You guys have gone so far as to block the doorways to Congressman's office. It takes a bit of courage, but then again, if we all had just that spark of courage, we could make one heck of a difference. Am I right?
Yeah, it was kind of a baptism by fire. Even though I've had disabilities through my life, I'd never looked at life as much from Jackie's angle or Cheryl's angle. Cheryl was paralyzed from the neck down for the last 12 or so years of her life, yet she was out there being active. And we got there, we knew we were going to do something. We didn't know what. And eventually we found ourselves heading towards Bob Barr's office, and Jim laid Cheryl down in his doorway and spoke for a while, and some SSDP students started chanting, "Bob Barr has gone too far." And it was an amazing thing for me, going to that level of activism, and we kept it that way with Jim and Cheryl and Jackie, and we dubbed ourselves the Commando Squad, because it was four people in a little hotel room with two wheelchairs and all this medical equipment. You could barely squeeze in there, but we got things done, you know, and, you know, kind of led by example. And it, when Cheryl passed away and we organized a memorial for her, it took it again to the next level with all these new Cheryls out there being active in their communities. And it's great to see that blossoming of this activism.
You know, oftentimes the prohibitionists say that people like me, legalizers, are just using these medical marijuana patients for our own designs. And yet, the truth be told, it is these medical marijuana patients that get up early and make sure I'm up early to make the rally or the trip to the state house. It is a fraud, it is a shame, it is a travesty that our nation has taken this once highly esteemed medicine and turned it into a threat to national security. Okay, now for some closing thoughts. I do want to welcome three new affiliates, WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, KKCR in Hanalei, Hawaii, and WJSC in Johnson, Vermont. Our guest next week will be Peter Crist, one of the directors of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. There'll be lots more from the Normal Conference on the 420 reports for next week. And as always, I remind you, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful. For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of our affiliates in the U.S. and Canada, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. I think I'd like to head back to Oakland now.